This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
But right now we want to change gears and talk about growth and development, our Tuesday discussion here with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. And the first thing on our list here is a little something called the City Planning Commission. Of course, we're talking about Charlottesville, the city of Charlottesville, named for Queen Charlotte Sophia, King George III's young German bride who bore him 14 children, named after her, Charlottetown or Charlottesville. The City Planning Commission, what's the latest? Because they've made some headlines recently, and I haven't been too happy with those headlines.
I love it when you go historian on it.
Anytime, anywhere.
I learn so much. That's good. The City Planning Commission is talking about limiting their communications with the public and with developers. So now, you know, they got my attention a few weeks ago when they said they wanted to also limit their visibility by having a pre-meeting outside of the city hall, outside of the camera view on public access TV. And they haven't had one of those since I brought that up, but I think they're going to try to do that next week at 5 o'clock, and Charlottesville Tomorrow will be there to record that. But
so you're allowed to podcast.
It's still a public meeting. So they clearly
don't want anybody there if they're doing it away from the cameras in somebody's office.
Well, I haven't actually talked to one of them and asked them about it. So when I asked staff about it, they said the goal was to increase efficiency. They wanted to increase the efficiency of government and have people talking about the agenda in advance of the full meeting. But what happened last week, Coy, was the City Planning Commission was meeting in the basement conference room, and they had a long talk about whether it was appropriate for them to speak with applicants in particular or activists on a particular city issue. So imagine you've got a developer with a project in front of the City Planning Commission. One of the planning commissioners expressed discomfort about the fact that developers were calling him up and saying, I'd like to meet with you, talk to you about my project before you vote on it. And one of the planning commissioners was a little uncomfortable with that. He's a newer planning commission member, and he wasn't sure that was right, and he asked that the whole commission talk about it. But then they extended it to the public as well. And so citizen activists who had a concern for or against a particular project, they were uncomfortable talking with them as well in advance of a public meeting. So it's not to hide anything from the public, but it is a concern that the city has that's very unusual because the county is completely opposite. You know, I called several county planning commissioners and asked them what they thought of this city change, and the county said, God, we talk to people all the time. We go to sites, we meet with the neighbors, we talk to developers, and it all helps, in their mind, in the county, build up more information by which they can actually make a decision. Staff in the city were urging the city planning commissioners not to do their job and let the applicants come through them, let the community come through the staff, and then the final result of that exchange would be in front of the planning commission. They would certainly hear public comment on a project, but it's just it's a real shift. It's not official yet, but they're studying it.
Who's behind all this? Because this makes no sense. I don't know where to start with this. It's disappointing. It doesn't sound like the whole point of local government is that the folks who are in government are your neighbors. And you can pick up the phone, you can talk to them at the grocery store, you can, whether it's city council or the planning commission or the school board, that's the whole point, has always been the whole point behind local government. They're in your community. It's government in your neighborhood. And so it makes no sense that the staff in the city hall would start telling these elected people, you can't talk to your constituents. That don't make any sense. Well, is that even legal?
Mr. Osteen, who's one of the newer planning commission members, asked, well, does this apply to city council? And staff said, yes, it should apply to city council as well.
What?
Mr. Osteen said, listen, I've been around 25 years and city councilors have always sat down with me and talked with me as long as I wanted to talk to them about some community issue. So he was a little skeptical. In the end, they actually put a motion on the table to eliminate all it's called ex parte communications. So communications with an outside entity like this. They put a motion on the table. It was seconded, but it didn't pass. They withdrew it and reached consensus to have staff draft up a procedure that would strongly discourage any ex parte communications. The full story is up on our blog at cvilletomorrow.org. and you can listen to the whole discussion.
It's like staff is trying to force the ostrich head right into the ground. You know?
Staff were saying they had legal concerns. They were saying, you know, listen, we haven't been sued yet, but if we're not careful, we might get a lawsuit from an applicant who says, well, I talked to so-and-so before the vote. They were fully supportive, but then they voted against it. Therefore, I'm going to sue the city of Charlottesville for, you know, the fact that I didn't get due process on my application. Again, the county takes a whole
It doesn't even sound like that would hold water at all as a legal case. Like, Delegate Jones told me he was going to vote a different way and he voted another way, so I'm going to sue him?
It's not a concern I've heard raised in Virginia before. So I think this is something new. I think it was interesting. That's why we gave it some attention. But again, it comes down to planning commissioners who were feeling uncomfortable talking to people with a vested interest. They felt like that might prejudice their decision. And staff saying they had some legal concerns about those kinds of communications. Some planning commission members said, well, what if we only have the meetings at City Hall with a staff member present? And that wasn't good enough either.
What? This doesn't make... And what would be shocking is if they get away with this.
I mean, the things we typically worry about in Virginia are public meetings happening unintentionally. So if you get three members of an appointed body like this or an elected body, if three people get together and they talk about public business and it hasn't been advertised, it's not an official public meeting, then you've got a problem with the Freedom of Information Act requirements public meetings.
Yeah. But if it's just one member of a planning commission or one member of a city council.
A grocery store
episode. You run into your, hey, it's Joe, you live down the street from me and I know you're on the planning commission. Can I ask you what's going on with so-and-so? Well, I just want you to know I don't like that. We can't do that anymore.
Can you imagine saying to that person, I'm sorry, you'll have to come to a public hearing and
say
that. I'm
sorry the staff told me I was not allowed to listen to you anymore. They got to get that straight. That doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense. What do you think about it? 977-1070 is the phone number. If you would like to, I'm not going to ask you if you'd like to. I'm going to tell you. Pick up the phone, 977-1070. What do you think? You live in the city of Charlottesville? I'm curious what you think about this. Should the city of Charlottesville change its rules such that the members of the Planning Commission and the members of the City Council can no longer talk with their constituents and the constituents express their views.
Yeah, about matters that are directly in front of them.
That doesn't make any... How can that be legal in a free society?
They still ask them if they like the cantaloupes, I guess. But you know, the ironic thing, I pulled up the bylaws for the Planning Commission, and it says Citizen Advice and Participation, Section 4.2. Says the commission will encourage participation of citizens of the community on matters affecting neighborhoods or with citywide implications. Well, I think that's going to be harder to do if they pass this.
Well, they're going against their own bylaws then by discouraging it.
Yes, they
and
are.
Not just discouraging it, but making it impossible. Because really, there's a difference there. They're not discouraging it. They're literally changing the rules such that it's not possible.
They want it. Well, that idea failed, but they want to strongly discourage. They want a policy that will say we strongly discourage these types of communications about something immediately in front of the planning
commission. Am I missing something here? What exactly? Explain for us again the types of communication that are concerning some of these people in City Hall.
Well, let's say the project recently approved at 201 Avon, which wraps around the Beck Cohen Barn, 9-story condominium building. If you're the developer, you might pick up the phone, call a planning commissioner and say, hey, I really want this building to be successful. One of the things I'm going to do to entice you to vote for it is I'm going to make it LEED certified. So it's going to be very environmentally friendly. It's going to be the only residential building in Virginia that's LEED certified. What these commissioners are saying is that makes them uncomfortable. They would rather have that conversation in public in front of a, you know, on camera in front of a public body in a public meeting. By the same token, if a citizen who lived across the street called up and said, I don't think it's appropriate to wrap a 9-story building around a historic barn structure that messes with the fabric of downtown Charlottesville, if somebody had that opinion about it, they would also say to them, I'm sorry, you need to come say that either in an email, I guess, to the whole commission all at once, or come to a public meeting.
I can't believe they're actually entertaining this very idea in Charlottesville City Hall. I mean, this is just so, I want to say asinine, but I'm not going to, but it's ridiculous. I mean, this is clearly a First Amendment issue. You're telling people that you cannot go speak to your elected representatives in local government about issues you care about. You're not allowed to. Tom is on the line of line 1, 977-1070. Tom, you're on. Go right ahead.
Hi, guys. How's things going?
Good. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah. I have no problem with them meeting, as long as there's some sort of record of when the meeting was and you know, some semblance of what took place, just so that, in other words, if that's somebody meeting privately with the developer or on the other side, member of the community, if it's going to eventually come into the public process, then the people should know about it.
So maybe if you're that planning commissioner and you go out and meet with a developer about something, then you should, it should be in the rules perhaps, or you should know that part of your duty is to debrief, send an email or send some type of note to everybody else saying, hey, I met with Mary Johnson, the developer. These are some of the issues you talked about. This were some of her concerns.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, because I mean, some of the things that we've seen in the past on the public side is we don't find out about a project until it's pretty far down the path and hitting the Planning Commission, and when all of a sudden, you know, it hits you in the face that here's a project coming before the Planning Commission for your area. You didn't have any knowledge of it, and yet there's been meetings going on for some time between staff and the developer, and no one else, and no one knew about it, and now you have to respond in a relatively short time.
Tom, I think those meetings can also be disconcerting from both sides. So if the developer finds out that citizen activists have sort of grabbed onto, you know, a faction of the Planning Commission and they're really hounding them, trying to change their mind about a development, I think the developers are probably going to hear about that. But again, I think it can come from both ways. I like your idea, though, of forcing sort of a record of the meeting. And in fact, if you sent even yourself an email or sent your colleagues an email, that would create a document that would be discoverable under the Freedom of Information Act requirements.
Yeah, because they have to keep track of all those emails,
right? That's right.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, both sides, Brian. I know when we did the Freedom of Information Act for Crozet and the Master Plan, I'm sure there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, I don't know, left out. But I want to make sure in the future that there is a record there, and it's available to the public, and we know what happened during the meeting.
Tom, thank you so much for the call. It's an excellent idea, and it sounds like that would solve the problem and might assuage staff concerns. 977-1070. Charlie's on line two in Albemarle County. Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, enjoying your conversation. So I'm assuming that no individual counselor is going to be able to talk to the university about anything until all the counselors are there together.
Well, they, you know, the question of...
Does it happen now?
You know, that's an interesting question. If you've got leading officials, and, you know, we sort of think of the university as another entity around here. It doesn't have an elected body, but we sort of think of the leaders of UVA as being on par with our supervisors and our city councilors. And, yeah, I guess it'd be okay if they talk to each other. It's funny. I went up to the city planning.
It would be okay with these under these rules?
I think we think of that as being okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But what we're saying is these new rules that the city of Charlottesville wants to implement, some of the staff over there, wouldn't be allowed.
I don't think there's any chance that this rule is going to apply to city council. I can tell you that.
It shouldn't apply to planning commission.
At this
Brian.
Point, it's just being talked about by the planning commission.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went up to one of them and I...
One of who?
One of the city planning commissioners. Yeah. I said, you know, if you're going to have regular meetings with your colleagues in the county, that's probably going to be the avenue by which everyone tries to reach you. Because, you know, we sort of want them to work with their peers in the county. But then that would be seen as a channel of a way to sort of get their attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to people in the county.
Is it one, Brian Wheeler is our guest. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeavilleTomorrow.org. We're talking growth and development, and we're talking some new developments over at Charlottesville City Council, some proposed new rules by staff that would prohibit conversations between members of the Planning Commission and the citizens of Charlottesville and concerned citizens in our area, including the developers. Is it one person over there that's doing this, or is there really this groundswell in City Council or in City Hall that believes there's this huge problem?
My understanding was it was one planning commissioner's concern. He brought it to the rest of the commission, and he found support for this from his fellow commissioners. One commissioner, Sherry Lewis, was not present for the discussion, so I don't know what her position is on the issue. She is a lawyer, so she might have a different take on some of these things. It was brought up by one commissioner. They put it on their agenda for public discussion by the commission, and one thing led to another. The conversation sort of was heading one direction, and then somebody said, "Hey, there's no easy way to do this. Let's just eliminate all these communications." Period. And then staff said, even if you put that motion on the table, we won't give you a policy that says that. They said, we will only write something that says strongly discourage, because we probably legally can't, as you pointed out, probably can't close the door entirely.
Yeah. You can't tell a citizen of Charlottesville that you're not allowed to talk to a member of the Planning Commission by yourself, even if you run into them at the grocery store. You're going to have to talk about something else and not matters before the Planning Commission. That's just ridiculous. Really ridiculous.
That's my ridiculous item of the day for you, Corey.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeaVilleTomorrow.org. And just to wrap up that last thing about this, City Hall, and the only reason that it sort of ticks me off, because we have legislators in Richmond who are saying they want to have meetings without recording their votes. They don't want folks to be able to watch them debate the issues that affect our lives. We're not allowed to watch them unless you get in your car and drive to Richmond. But in 2007, we're not allowed to have them online or on public television. It just seems like we should be going in the other direction, doesn't it?
Well, Coy, but keep in mind what this the small number of planning commissioners who brought this forward and talked about it a lot, what they want is to have they're trying to get more of these conversations into the public realm by having them at an open public meeting. So I think that would be their rebuttal.
So saying to a developer, you know what, you want me to have lunch with you to talk about your project? Well, I'm not going to do that. Why don't you just come to a meeting and talk about
it? Come to a work session. If you want to tell me how great your project is, then come tell all of us all at once so we all have the same information to work from.
Or just have people sign up, a bunch of local citizens who care about growth and development in Charlottesville. You could sign up, and then he could send out on a listserv, send everybody an email, hey, I'm going to lunch with developer Mary Johnson over here. Come join us.
Yeah, well, you know, there are a few people in Congress now putting their public calendars on their website and of who they're meeting with, what time of day. You know, we should get everyone doing that on the web.
I like that. Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeaVilleTomorrow.org. What is the, you've got a note to me here saying something about Meadow Creek Parkway funding. You mean there's money for the Meadow Creek Parkway? Get out of here. What are you talking about?
Well, we're still trying
are you smoking?
The county is still trying to get enough money together to make this work. So I put a little graph up on our website, and what is up there shows this came out of a discussion with the Board of Supervisors who talked about their secondary road fund allocation. The way this works, folks, is we get an allocation from the Department of Transportation, and the secondary road funds accumulate into different projects. So the Meadow Creek Parkway has been accumulating money for many, many years. It's never had enough money to actually start and have construction begin. So that is a game of catch-up because, of course, the cost of these projects goes up every year. So what I did was I showed in a bar graph the rising cost of the Meadow Creek Parkway and the declining revenues that we're receiving from the Virginia Department of Transportation for these projects. What the supervisors did last week was put in place a plan that would get enough funding in place to start the project in 2008. Of course, the cost may go up next year, and we may be playing catch-up again next year. This is a local example of the state funding of transportation crisis.
How much money is it going to take to do the Meadow Creek Parkway? Do we know?
Right now, well, and keep in mind there's
$35?
There are three different parts of the Meadow Creek Parkway. The county part is $25.5 million. That's what is projected to cost. Right now, as of today, they only have $18.2 million in hand. So they have this bucket, and they put money in it over the years. Every year, they get a little bit of money from the state, and they throw it in the Meadow Creek Parkway bucket. The bucket's never been full, so the bulldozers have never started on this. The city has the interchange with Meadow Creek Parkway heading into the 250 bypass. That's been funded by federal dollars. That's about $27 million for this grade-separated interchange.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's another part, McIntyre Road Extended, it's called, or I guess McIntyre Road, right in front of the skate park. And that will need to be upgraded, and that's the city's portion.
They're going to get rid of the skate park to make this Meadow Creek Parkway?
Yes. I think that's most likely. And the rescue squad's in play, too. So both those things may need to find new homes. But that is being discussed. Next week, in fact, is the next meeting about the 250 interchange. And that's on the 27th. It's an all-day affair in City Hall. So if people want to learn about that, 250interchange.org is where you can get all the information on that subject.
It's Tuesday. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Our very own Betty is on line two in Charlottesville. Betty, rock on.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Brian Wheeler so much for his fabulous website.
Well, you are welcome.
I think it's brilliant, and I think anyone who hasn't looked at it or isn't using it to find out about Charlottesville and Albemarle is really missing out.
Well, I thank you so much, Betty. I've learned over the past year and a half there's a whole lot to be keeping track of, and so that's why we're adding we're adding staff this year to help with that effort and hope to make it even bigger and better.
And, well, he has podcasts, too.
We have podcasts, and we're going to do video this year.
Oh, wow. Well, I do have a question for you.
Video, cool.
I read in the Washington Post that the legislation that would have tied transportation issues to development rights or the right to develop property is pretty much dead. But in the Washington Post article, it said that the lawmakers already had the tools to refuse a rezoning if it put an undue burden on transportation. That wasn't my understanding from what the Albemarle supervisors have been saying, but I wondered what you understood about that.
Yep. Betty, good question.
That's an exceptional question. Yeah, give her lots of bells there. It is possible to reject a rezoning, to say no to a new development, if transportation is one of the components. What I've heard the county attorneys tell the Board of Supervisors is that can't be your only reason to reject this development. However, if it's one of the reasons, one of several reasons, and they outline exactly what those reasons are, then local government, yes, it is empowered to turn down a rezoning request. I think what local government has asked for over the years is to make that case a little more easy for them to figure out. So we've talked about things like adequate public facilities. Local government has long lobbied Richmond for adequate public facilities legislation, which would give them another set of reasons to defer a development, to set the timing of it such that it came when we had the schools in place, when we have the roads in place. One of the things I hear the most from the public is frustration that the infrastructure is not there in the first place to support new development. We hear that a lot along Jarman's Gap Road in Crozet. We're hearing that in Biscuit Run. The concerns about sewer lines, water lines, roads, schools, you name it. And local government's in a bind in that respect. They can ask for proffers. I guess my long-winded answer is yes. They can say no to rezoning. Transportation, though, can't be the only reason. A lot of the things that have been talked about in Richmond this cycle and for many cycles in the past is trying to find that balance. What additional power could be given to local government, whether it's impact fees, adequate public facilities, those are some of the tools that are missing in Virginia that people who move here from other places say, why on earth don't you do this here? And what Richmond is always saying is what you just said. You do have the power already. Go back home and, you know, do the right thing.
Thanks a lot.
Great.
Thanks, Betty. Appreciate the call, Betty. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. So you can, a local government then could refuse a development. Can you, not only for transportation, but can you say, look, we don't want this neighborhood here because we don't have enough roads, schools.
Absolutely.
Can it be a list of that infrastructure stuff that just isn't in place?
Yeah. Now, at the time of rezoning is the time when local government has the most power. After something's been rezoned, they've given up everything. Their negotiating time is over. At that point, you're just waiting for the developer to bring in the site plan and say, okay, here's my plan to do what this zoning allows. It's if the land needs to be rezoned, that local government has some power on which they can ask for things.
Yeah.
They can't really, of course, you know this dance with proffers. They can't really directly ask for it, but they can sort of encourage.
Secretly over lunch.
In those conversations
at McDonald's.
That they won't be having in the city anymore.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, SeevilleTomorrow.org. I can see that that's a good thing because you don't want developers to basically decide how your area is going to grow. And that's the whole reason we have organizations like Charlottesville Tomorrow. Hey, citizens should be in this discussion, not just planning staff, and a developer. You should have local citizens know when the meetings are, where are the meetings, and know when can I speak out, when can I share, whether it's pro or con.
Well, here's a real important
thing. The downside is, though, just one second, the downside is I could see where if this was too much in one direction, you could always tell a developer, hey, we don't have the infrastructure for you. So then the developers all leave.
Yep.
Which is a big part of the economy here.
Well, we have a lot of room in our growth areas for new development. We have a lot of housing that's already been approved that's in the pipeline. People want to build homes here. There's plenty of business for the next 20, 40 years. So there's been a lot of housing approved. The thing I would point out is that Albemarle was forward-thinking, in my opinion, by setting up the designated growth areas. They said we need to target certain areas to have higher density growth where we can have the population there, where we have the infrastructure. We hopefully will have the roads. Again, we get to the funding challenge. But if that's taken care of, you know, the idea is you have the roads in place. You've got the water and sewer. You've got the schools. That then says the rural areas can be protected, that we can have our open space. We can have our farms, fields, forest, and we can have our mountaintops. So I think Albemarle was smart in that respect. The city is also a designated growth area, and they have had a lot of infill development happen this year that's been approved in the past calendar year. So I think those are good things. And what you see in Richmond is the Republicans actually came forward as part of their transportation package and said, listen, we will reward localities that do things like Albemarle. If they build neighborhood model style development that has interconnected streets where the neighborhoods are connected, so you're not pushing all the traffic out to one major thoroughfare.
Yeah, not just a bunch of cul-de-sacs.
If you have interconnected neighborhoods, if you don't have just cul-de-sacs, we will reward you and we'll actually pay for maintaining and building the secondary roads that you need. However, that was never figured out. Of course, the proposals run into trouble down there. But it was interesting, and I think Jim, this would be a great thing for us to talk about with Jim Bacon when he comes, because he's been all over this. And he said it was the first time he thought this cul-de-sacs type issue had been talked about by the General Assembly. So with cul-de-sac development, then they would say, we're not going to pay for those roads. If you want to, Board of Supervisors, City Council, if you want to approve those developments, you're going to have to pay for the roads. Of course, right now they're saying they're having to pay for them anyway. But
yeah, we're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow, and the phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. Cindy, on line one, you're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
Hi, Coy and Brian. First of all, I just want to thank you both. Brian really keeps us informed as to what's going on, and it's great, Coy, that you have him on the show so that people can listen to him as they're driving home from work and really stay informed.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
I just wanted to thank you both.
Thank you.
What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Oh, you don't even want to know.
Oh, now I got to know.
No, I live east of Charlottesville, so we're going to have traffic, transportation, and growth issues coming before the supervisors and planning commission pretty soon.
East near, what's the...
Near Glenmore.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because they want to expand, don't they?
Yep, the Village of Rivanna, yeah.
The Village of Rivanna is the designated growth area east of town, and like Crozet, it's sort of a little island off to itself.
It is.
And a lot of people know about the Crozet one.
There.
So what do they want to do down there?
They have a couple... They really want to expand the gated community of Glenmore, but then right outside of the gated community, they also want to put in the Rivanna Village, which will be commercial and residential, 500 residential places plus commercial. So it's in a park. So that is going to be a challenge. And then to have Route 250 East handle all of that.
It's not going to happen. It barely handles it now. It barely handles it now, doesn't it?
That's right. And when you have a village, I think the comprehensive plan calls for the village to have roads with adequate capacity without altering the character of the roads. So
how are you going to do that?
You tell me.
It is
fairy dust.
Yes, it is.
You know, our residents around here are very smart. And, you know, they point out this problem.
That's true.
With having these islands of growth, and then you have limited ways for people to get to the jobs. So people in Crozet, how are they going to get to NGIC to work up 29 North? The question is, do you come in 250 or do you come in 64? Same question applies out of Glenmore. And people don't like to backtrack to get to an interstate on-ramp. So that makes it a challenge for people. And until there's enough, you know, friction on 250, then people might jump on 64. Ironically, the folks in Virginia at VDOT don't want people commuting on 64. They want people passing through us, going on to their next town. They don't like 64 to be used for commuting. They want that traffic on 250. Now, out east of town, as Cindy knows, 250 has been widened to accommodate some of that out a certain distance. 250 West, however, is very protected by the Board of Supervisors, who have drawn a line in the sand and said, we are never, ever going to widen 250 West. It's a scenic rural, you know,
road. Yeah, but even if 250 has been widened, have you tried to drive east on 250 at about 5 o'clock, 5:15 over Pantops? Well,
you should have tried it between noon and 2:30 today when there had been an accident. Plus, early mornings when you go to get on 64, if you want to backtrack to like Black Cat Road and get on 64 there, it's becoming 64 is really crowded in the mornings.
Really? Coming in from the east?
Coming in from the east.
Especially when you get to 29 and people are trying to turn to go to Fontaine Research Park or UVA.
Right. Well, my husband has to go that way, and he's running into a lot of traffic because he does backtrack every morning.
Yep.
We need a big old beltway.
Making the roads wider doesn't necessarily help things long term. And I think that's one of the things we've learned. There's certainly places where the community benefits from roads being widened. 29 North, people, you know, generally just hate if you ask them about the traffic. But part of the problem is we still have this constriction between Hollymead Town Center and, you know, the Walmart Sam's, where it constricts down to two lanes in each direction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that there's a place where I think most people would look at that and say, hey, why don't we widen that? You know, of course, it is a money issue. But at some point, will help the flow of traffic.
Why don't we widen it? Is it just money?
That's a money issue.
Because they widen the bridge,
It is on the list. The bridge is ready to handle it.
Yeah.
Well, Coy, you might appreciate this, though, but 250 East and West is very historic. So we don't want to go messing with it too much. You know, the old three-chop road.
Absolutely.
We don't want to mess with it
too much. Cindy, wasn't VDOT doing a study about how much to widen that out to, you know, Black Cat Road?
They were talking about that, but the problem is when you get to Shadwell, we don't really need it widened so much before, past Shadwell. It's when you get to Shadwell, we have 22 feeding in and 729, and all of these other lanes are feeding in.
All right. That's at that gas station, Coy, where the
road splits.
Yeah, you can go 22 north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to Gordonsville.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's growth, you know, managing the growth is going to be the best answer right there.
But here's the question then. Do our local municipalities have the tools, the necessary tools to manage the growth? And that means being able to say no to a developer when they feel like it's in the best interest of the community.
I saw on WINA's website that Ken Boyd announced he was running for re-election. Ken Boyd represents part of that area out in Keswick. And then 250, I think, is sort of the dividing line, isn't it, Cindy?
Right, and then Lindsay Doria
represents the Scottsville district.
Ken's not going to say no
but
to anything.
But I saw on the website that Ken was in favor of smart growth. And one of the principles, I guess, people would say of smart growth is those transportation alternatives that you are able to get, you know, proffers from new development that help with these transportation issues. You've seen some members of the Board of Supervisors say no to certain proposals, especially out in Crozet, because they were not bringing enough to the table for transportation.
Right.
This is a conversation that's going to heat up next month in March when a little ad hoc task force working on proffers is going to come back to the Board of Supervisors and say, here are our recommendations for cash proffers and a policy which would make it clear to the development community what the expectations are. So I think there's some work to be done on that front. But we also have some major, major developments. Albemarle Place was one you were asking me about during the break. Albemarle Place has been approved. So that's already been rezoned. Now the site plan, most of it has been approved. And now the county just waits for it to be built. And that's going to drop a lot of cars on 29. North Point, Hollymead Town Center, they have a lot of houses to be built. And
that are already approved.
They're already approved. That's going to put a lot more cars on 29. So that's why you have other people, and just to segue to my calendar here,
Cindy, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Please let me hear from you again. Thanks.
Bye.
Next week, we've got the Places 29 public workshop. Places 29 is the master planning process for the whole 29 North Corridor, and that's an opportunity for the public. It's on the 26th. Go to SeavilleTomorrow.org. You can check out the calendar.
SeavilleTomorrow.org. It's where the future happens, right here in our neck of the woods. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We'll see you folks tomorrow afternoon. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.